It's time for the Sport Diehards on Radio AFS with your host, Steve Itzkowitz. Welcome to the Sport Diehards on Radio AFS, ladies and gentlemen. I am your host, Steve Itzkowitz, as the announcer just mentioned. An announcer named Jeff, by the way. Jeff just joined the show, and he's going to be announcing us in and out for the rest of my time on the Sport Diehards with Radio AFS. So welcome to the team, Jeff. Great job on that initial take. This show is being brought to you by Gallagher's Pub and Grill, 2751 East Broadway, Long Beach, California, 90803. The ultimate Sports Diehard hangout. Don't believe me? Stop by there this Sunday, ask for Kieran, and you will see exactly what I mean. Because at Gallagher's Pub and Grill, I guarantee you, you will enjoy good food, make fast friends, and enjoy all your sports and your favorite teams on high-definition TV. Let me just start out by reading you a headline. I looked up, I just did a Google search about 30 seconds ago. Oh, let me give a shout-out to my friend Hank Tran, who's listening in right now. Hank, would love an interesting topic for the show. Text me, if you can, your topic idea, and I'd certainly love to get it on because I'm sure it will be interesting. Didn't mean to cut you off there, but I had to go live there. So thank you very much for listening in. But I did a Google search, and this is an NFL-heavy show. I'll tell you that right now. It's going to be mostly NFL. It's Thanksgiving week, and happy Thanksgiving to all the families out there. Yes, the year is almost over. Can you believe it? So happy Thanksgiving. This is going to be an NFL-heavy show for the next 60 minutes. And one of the interesting things that came out of Week 11 of the NFL was the fact that all 12 of – 12 missed extra points from the games. 12. A 12-pack of extra point misses. I've never really said how I feel about extra points, but this phenomenon, if you can call it that, makes me want to comment on what I think about extra points. First of all, I'm not even reacting to the 12 missed extra points, except to say, so freaking what? Who cares? You had to expect this because, well, now instead of an 18-yard extra point attempt, it's now 33. And that is the way it goes. I'm sorry, 17 yards, now it's 34. This is not that surprising, but, of course, they're going to make a headline out of it because no one saw it coming, and that's what a headline is, something that happens that no one saw coming. And one of the headlines that I saw when I did a search on the 12 missed extra point, NFL kickers missed a record 12 extra points on Sunday, proving this rule change is great. That's from SB Nation. And my question is, SB Nation, great for whom? What is the greatness of missing extra points? As a matter of fact, what is the greatness of extra points to begin with? You know, and some people will say, well, it adds drama to the game. Some do big hits. Quarterbacks going into the concussion protocol like Andrew Luck, talk more about that in a second. Not to mention touchdowns, sacks, big tackles, and special teams play. There's plenty of drama in football. Why are we constantly looking to add drama? Because it's interesting? Is that the only thing about life that's interesting is drama? Drama is also something that causes stress, and stress is something that causes all sorts of medical maladies that none of us wishes on ourselves. Maybe we don't care if it happens to other people, if you're that type of person, which I'm not. But drama leads to stress. Stress leads to all sorts of medical maladies that no one prays happens to them, right? So why are we constantly looking at drama? Why can't we just give a team 7 points and call it a day? Why do they have to drive the length of the field to score a touchdown and then come back out and go through an authentic football play with offensive linemen and defensive linemen trying to kill each other and a place kicker with a quarterback or a punter holding the ball, and if they get run into, you know, they're going to get hurt. Why do we have to have extra points? Seriously, what's the point of extra points? And the drama in the game, as I just established, there's enough drama in this game. And I'm sure they'll think of more ways to add more drama to this game. Extra points, to me, are a big waste of time. They even have a term for it, PAT, P-A-T, point after touchdown. Point after touchdown? You know what that sounds like to me? Forever and a day. How do you know when the extra day comes? You don't, because it's forever. That's the point. What's the point of football? Touchdowns. or stopping a team from scoring them. And if you don't get a touchdown, you kick a field goal. And that I get. I get field goals in football. I do. Because if you can't score a touchdown, you at least want to be able to score in another way. Just ask the Los Angeles Rams about that. They will tell you how thankful they are for the opportunity to kick field goals because they haven't scored too many touchdowns this year. A 4-win team to get 6 losses, not too many touchdowns this year. So field goals, as the Rams will attest to, have a place in the NFL. But extra points after a touchdown? That's like saying, okay, great. That's like Christmas without the presents. That's like New Year's without the party. That's like a birthday without anyone whatsoever saying happy birthday to you. An extra point after a touchdown. The touchdown being the whole point. And then we got to come out and kick an extra point. It's completely pointless to me. Therefore, this phenomenon of 12 extra points, it doesn't prove this rule change is great. What it proves is that extra points are just downright silly. And players can say, well, we need extra points to have a job. No, you don't. You have field goals. You have kickoffs. You know that thing called touchbacks? Okay, when you want to keep the ball, when you're going to keep the ball out of a returner that can actually return the ball for touchdowns, there's plenty of value. There's plenty of things for players kickers to be worried about besides extra points. Field goals and touchbacks are keeping the ball away from a prime time kick returner, right? Do away with extra points, but this is not a headline. This is just silly. Absolutely silly, if you ask me. That's pretty much all I have to say about that. And I just got Hank's text message here. Yes. And Hank, and actually, it's funny you brought that up. That was on my topic list. Another media screw-up is on our hands. It's real simple. Now, we live in a day and age, let me preface the following, that we live in a day and age where there's a lot of options for you to get your news now. Traditional TV, radio, magazine, well, magazine's not really news. Well, I guess you could say it is, but as far as live breaking news, TV, radio, social media, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Snapchat, all those things. So there's a lot of outlets right now trying to be out there first, trying to be the first to break what would be considered to be a big story. And one of the bigger stories in college football this year involves the status of University of Texas head football coach Charlie Strong. Not to be fused with Chuck Strong, Chuck Pagano of the Indianapolis Colts, but Charlie Strong, a strong defensive-minded head coach, who is having a nightmare season at the University of Texas, coming off a loss against downtrodden Kansas University, a school more known for basketball than football, certainly. And so after that loss against Kansas, just about every major news outlet reported yesterday that the University of Texas has decided to fire Charlie Strong. And Charlie Strong conducted his press conference today, clarifying that he has not been fired. So the media has announced the firing of University head football coach Charlie Strong, even though the school hasn't actually told Strong what the media has told everybody else. And the question is, why? Why are we putting something out? Now, okay, I'm going to answer this question. This is a rhetorical question. Why are we putting something out that has not been confirmed by the source that could actually pull the trigger on firing Charlie Strong, that source being the University of Texas? Because we're trying to get there first. We're trying to be clever. Or somehow the media has joined with the University of Texas administrators to help them make decisions on the status of their coaches or their employees. And that's possible. As the media, obviously the media can't, you know, be in cahoots with any organization. It has to appear to be unbiased and objective, even though it's not most of the time, but they have to appear to be that way. So we know it's not, the media has somehow completely devoted itself to helping the University of Texas find a head football coach that will satisfy the enormous needs of their boosters, their fans, and the community at large. Because as we learn in the movie, The Longest Yard, Texas is known for two things, prisons and football. So football is a big deal down there, to put it mildly. But what annoys me about this is we've announced the firing of the head coach, and yet the school has not officially pulled the trigger on him, and he had his press conference this morning. We have put the cart in front of the horse. In our attempt to be there first, we have come in last in terms of showing intelligence. It's real simple. Here's what the news is. The news is reporting something that has happened. Not reporting something before it's out. Yeah, we can speculate. Now, someone has speculated. Speculation exists that Charlie Sprong is going to be fired by the University of Texas at some point after an ignominious loss to the University of Kansas. Now, that counts for news these days, speculating on news that could happen. That actually counts as news these days. And I don't like that any more than reporting something before it's actually confirmed by a credible source. But that passes for news these days on things that could happen, or what a guy didn't say during a press conference, or whatever the case may be. Whatever they can do to fill airtime and get people riled up. That's the media's whole game. But this is inexcusable, and if I'm Charlie Strong, I don't talk to the media for the rest of the year. Because if the media is going to report something that, you know, as a matter of fact, I'm not sure Charlie Strong should talk to his Texas administrators for the rest of the year. Because he's not going to be there. At some point, he's not going to be the head coach of the University of Texas. And I personally think that we'll know that after the season ends, because Texas will not be going to a bowl game. They're not going to make it there. They're going to have six wins. Not going to get them. That's when we're going to hear it. And that's when the media should report that he has been fired. But for the media report on Sunday, before Texas can confirm on Monday, which they haven't, and Monday is pretty much over there in the Midwest. This is an embarrassment, and quite frankly, someone, whoever put this out, whoever broke this story should be fired, or he or she needs to check their sources much more accurately and confirm that this has actually happened. Because if it actually happened, the media will report it, and the school will call a press conference to confirm it. That's how this works. But instead, the media reported it, and Texas... And then Charlie Strong comes on, has his Monday press conference, and clarifies he has not been fired. And I believe Charlie Strong because he is a credible source. He is on the inside. And if Charlie Strong was fired, chances are someone else would be conducting that press conference. But that wasn't the case. So, this is why we're here, ladies and gentlemen, the Sports Star Hearts, to tell you the truth. The truth of the matter is that the media screwed up. Now, eventually, Charlie Strong may be fired, but it says the decision was made last night to fire him, but there's been no official announcement by Texas. And unless Texas somehow decided to fire him on Sunday, then forgot that they did so on Monday, which is possible. It's possible the athletic director took a bump in the head and just forgot, but probably not. And for any kids that may be listening, understand that a lot of these media outlets, especially the smaller ones, want to get there first with these stories to make themselves look good. It's more important to get it right. It's like instant replay in sports. The idea is to get it right, not to be there first, to dot your I's, to cross your T's, to double and triple check every fact that you get, and then put it out there. But clearly someone dropped the ball on this one, and someone needs to be disciplined over this and made to understand that news is about things that actually happen, but not reporting something that could happen as actually happening. That's what happened here. It could be that Charlie Strong is going to get fired. I think he will get fired. But I don't think it's going to happen until after the season, which actually makes sense. But if the media wants, so now we shouldn't hear anything anymore about this. Right, the media has already reported that he's fired. Texas has confirmed. We should hear no more about this. And if we do, then someone is basically like saying something and then apologizing later. We shouldn't hear any more about this until Texas confirms. Until then, the media should not say anything more about this, because if they do, and Charlie Strong is still the head coach, then we have a disconnect and we have something to be very suspicious about as to what's going on and who dropped the ball and where's all that and what's motivating this. So we should hear nothing more about this. At the end of the day, Charlie Strong is still the head coach of the University of Texas football team. And until Texas confirms otherwise, we should not report something that hasn't happened. We can speculate on it. We can say it should happen, like the Rams should fire Jeff Fisher. And I'll talk about that later. But to say it actually happened when it hasn't been confirmed by a credible source is enough to make me want to just go to somebody and just scream at them about common sense and then maybe a light slap in the back of the neck. Like, wake up. Don't report the news before it actually happened, okay? Don't tell me that 2 + 2 = 5. No, it still equals 4. That doesn't change, never will. And it never will change that news is about what has happened, not what may happen, reporting as if it did. That's an embarrassment, it's insulting, and quite frankly, I don't appreciate when the media does stuff like this. Not to mention you're messing with people's lives. Because if I'm Charlie Strong, I've been fired? Really? But the school hasn't told me, but so the media fired me? I guess that's, you know, when you get fired as a sports figure, as a head coach especially, usually the media will fire you, then the actual employer will fire you. So it seems like you have to fire someone twice to actually get rid of them once. So the media has already fired him, so we got that out of the way. Now Texas just has to do their part, and then we can move on, and maybe Charlie Strong can move on as well, because clearly he and Texas don't mix, unless you like water and dirt making mud. Coming up next, the NFL mismatch of the year happened this weekend in week 11. And I just have to talk about it, and it's going to make me laugh, but it's also going to make me a little bit sad because it involves one of my favorite teams. So that's coming up next, the NFL mismatch of the year. You're listening to the Sport Diehards on Radio AFS. Don't go anywhere. Welcome back to the Sport Diehards on Radio AFS. I'm your host, Steve Itzkowitz. And yes, the NFL mismatch of the year just happened. And what I'm talking about is the ungame of the week. You know, they have a game of the week. They should have an ungame of the week. This game should have been on Thursday Night Football. It felt like that kind of game. I'm talking about the New England Patriots versus the San Francisco 49ers. And I'm not even going to talk about the game because the Patriots won 30-17. Tom Brady was amazing, as always, and Julian Edelman had a huge game himself. And the Niners, the little legend that can't beat the Patriots anyways. And I have to laugh how the NFL came up with this matchup. Because think about the Patriots. They are the best-run franchise in all of sports, arguably. San Antonio Spurs, in the NBA, in Major League Baseball, well, the Cubs recently, the Yankees most of the time. But, you know, some franchises just know what they're doing. The Patriots know what they're doing. The Niners, on the other hand, if it wasn't for the Cleveland Browns, the Niners would be the worst run franchise. Well, that's why this is a mismatch. To have these two teams play in a game, to me, the NFL should not schedule two teams playing against each other, in which one franchise is really, really good and the other franchise is really, really bad. I'm not talking about the teams. I'm talking about the organizations. I mean, this was a blowout waiting to happen. What was the NFL thinking about? Matching these two teams together. Well, we set the Patriots on the road. So what? You think the Niners have a true home field advantage over there? Here's what home field advantage is. A crowd going crazy over a team that plays well. The Niners haven't played well all season since week one against the Rams. They don't have home field advantage because they don't play well enough to create a home field advantage. Or create enough urgency amongst their fans because fans respond to how the team plays. Therefore, if teams not playing very well, yeah, the fans may boo, but eventually they'll get so tired of booing that they'll just kind of sit there going, ho, hum, diddly, dumb, it is what it is. There is no home field advantage. So how did the NFL create the mismatch, the biggest mismatch ever in its league? The best franchise with the best team, at least in the AFC, versus a franchise that, with the exception of a 3 or 4 year period with Jim Harbaugh until, has been maybe arguably the worst run franchise this entire century so far. Well, that's probably the Cleveland Browns who came back in 1999. So, but it's just if you're a Niners fan watching them play the Patriots, boy, are you wish. As a Niners fan, do you think about jumping ship to the Patriots side just because their organization is the exact opposite of yours? I didn't have that thought because I hate the Patriots. But I'll bet you there were a lot of Niners fans watching that game yesterday thinking, man, I would love to be a Patriots fan instead because at least I know I have an organization that will do whatever it takes to win. The Niners organization isn't doing whatever it takes to win. The Niners organization is doing whatever it takes to be different. Whatever it, they're doing whatever it takes to show them who's boss. They're doing whatever it takes to show them how smart they are. The organizations in the NFL that get caught up in playing that game are often looking extremely dumb, foolish even. Like the old saying, far better to be silent and ignorant than to speak up and become a fool. When the Niners spoke up by getting rid of Jim Harbaugh, they became a fool after being ignorant enough to consider the idea of getting rid of the best head coach that they had since Bill Walsh, with honorable mention to George Seifert. You remember the Chargers of 2006, going 14-2, losing in the divisional round to these New England Patriots. And everyone's up in the arms. Everyone's mad as opposed to thinking about the opportunity you have next year to come back. Maybe you don't win as many games, but you certainly got a lot to play for, and you got a team that's very capable. The team was built to win right then and there. And they lost in the second round to a Patriots team. But then a lot of teams have lost to the Patriots in the playoffs. They have won 4 Super Bowls for a reason. And it became a tug of war between A.J. Smith, the general manager, and Marty Schottenheimer, the head coach. A.J. Spano sided with A.J. Smith. And the rest, as they say, is history, including the Chargers' chances of winning a Super Bowl when they had Philip Rivers, LaDainian Tomlinson, Vincent Jackson, Sean Merriman, Junior Seau, all those guys. They had a team that was built to win right then and there. Oh, Antonio Gates in his prime, did I mention him? They had a team that could win right then and there. And the general manager hired the head coach to produce a 14-2 team and then fired that head coach and then hired a head coach with a losing record in Norv Turner. That's what the Niners have done. When they sacked Harbaugh and hired Jim Tomsula, from a head football coach to an offensive line coach masquerading as a head football coach for 1 year. It was Trent Baalke versus Jim Harbaugh, and Trent Baalke won, and look where the Niners are now. Tanking like the Philadelphia 76ers in a stark competition with the Cleveland Browns for the number one overall pick going against the Patriots yesterday. It was funny. As an analyst, that was funny to me. I had to laugh. Like the Niners against the Patriots? I'm sorry, I thought it was supposed to be an NFL team against another. The Niners are an NFL team. They're a wannabe. They are a They're like a JV team trying to – you know what? If they had relegation like they do in soccer – In the English Premier League, the Niners would have been relegated right now along with the Cleveland Browns. That's what the Niners are. They're not they're in the league because there is no relegation rule for bad teams. But there should be. And the Niners should be right there on that list along with the Browns. That's what that game felt like. It felt like the Patriots were going against a team that they shouldn't have had to go against. Like if you're the Patriots, you're the Niners, you're thinking, we're playing them. And we got to travel out there to play them. And Niner fans have to go. You want to talk about a schedule loss. And I hate that term, schedule loss, because there's no such thing as scheduling a loss. You schedule a game that you could win or lose. There's no such thing as a schedule loss. Then a schedule loss, why show up to begin with? So I hate when the media uses that term. To me, it's an oxymoron. To me, it's kind of like reporting someone being fired before they're actually fired. Okay. But that was a schedule loss. If ever there was one, that was a schedule loss. And to me, it was, you know, that was akin to Alabama playing against University of Tennessee at Chattanooga on Saturday. Just a waste of time and just a mismatch of epic proportions, not just with the teams, but with the organizations behind them. So that was your NFL mismatch of the year. The Niners going against the Patriots. It may that never happen again until the Niners are at least halfway decent or at least competitive, which they can't even lay claim to right now. And speaking of uncompetitive, the Cleveland Browns are heading toward being the second team to go 0-16 this season. Remember the Lions, Detroit Lions did that in 2008. Look what the Lions are now. And I'm, you know, after the commercial break here, I'm going to go around the NFL here and say some things I noticed in the standings when I looked at them this morning, actually. I found some pretty interesting stuff that I want to point out to you, but I got to get the laughing stuff out of the way here. And the Cleveland Browns, there's plenty to laugh at about them. And if my man Dre Rock is listening right now, Dre, I apologize. But at least you had your Cavaliers, and certainly the Indians had a very respectable year this year. So think more about them as I go through my lambasting of the Cleveland Browns. Joe Thomas says the Cleveland Browns are getting what they deserve. And he's right. You go cheap. You know, NFL owners that are going cheap doesn't make much sense to me because all of them are billionaires. They're all billionaires. I don't know if any NFL owner that is not – maybe Mark Davis is not a billionaire. But then he was the son of a billionaire, so let's just call him a billionaire. Yes, he was an SOB. Although, as I hear it, by all accounts, a very nice guy. But I digress. The Indians are going, or I'm sorry, the Indians. the Browns are going cheap with talent. Why? I mean, you're trying to lose, and now you're going to be the second team to go 0-16. This is what you were going for? To be cheap? To draft a whole lot of players, create a whole lot of competition? You can do that anyways. You could do that anyways, but for you to go cheap and not try to get people in, and maybe they can't, but for them to not even try to bring people in that are established players. Because in the NFL, rookie players, you know, rookies are often slighted because they're rookies. Like they have that tag of rookie, like an interim head coach, a rookie player. You know, there's two types of players in the NFL. Those are rookies and those are not. You know, it's like they're not all players. It's like, well, he's a rookie. He's not even a player yet. It's like you got to graduate the player. It's not enough to be drafted. First, you got to be drafted, be a rookie, and then be a player in the NFL, right? The Cleveland Browns, predetermining to go cheap with personnel and a fan base that is as passionate as they come, have predetermined that they are going to fail and go 0-16. Now, if you're going 5-11, 6-10, fine. That's fairly respectable if you have low expectations, but 0-16? That's not even showing that you have a pulse. That's not even showing that you're competitive enough. They have no talent on this team. And whatever quarterback starts behind center will be on the injured list sooner rather than later. It's just amazing to me how teams set themselves up for failure like this. And now the Browns, who have been failing, who haven't had a single playoff appearance since reemerging in the NFL, now you see why we need relegation in the NFL. To force teams to do the best they can to be the best that they can be. Well, the Browns clearly aren't interested in that. What they're interested in is creating a whole lot of competition with cheap players and talent cost. And letting the players just kind of, you know, just kind of deal with that. Well, Jimmy Haslam and his buddies count their money. And players like Terrell Pryor, who is going to be a really good wide receiver in this league when he gets a quarterback to throw to him, and Joe Thomas, had to deal with. Pryor said after the loss, after their latest loss, we can't keep getting these guys hit. I'm tired of our guys getting hit. I'm nobody to complain because I don't want it, but it's personal for me because I care for those guys. And I don't like seeing them get hit like that. Point blank period. Someone's got to say it. I'm going to say it. And then Hugh Jackson spoke with Terrell Pryor and then said it's Pryor's place to criticize the Browns' press protection. Well, whose place is it, Hugh? Whose place is it? These are teammates, and they go to war together. From Joe Thomas said, "You've got to lie in the bed that you've made." Well, the bed that the Cleveland Browns have made for themselves is, well, like a kid with a bedwetting problem. It's not very comfortable. I apologize if I'm being a little bit graphic there, but that's essentially what it feels like. And I know because I had that happen to me a couple times when I was a kid. It's not fun. And the fact of the matter is the Browns, if going 0-16 is what it's going to take for them to wake up, then you've got to ask yourself, how much do the Browns understand what it takes to win in the football league? You have to invest. You have to have a quarterback. But you also have the offensive line. Because on a previous show, I said, yeah, it's a quarterback-driven game. It's an offensive line-driven game, too. Because I don't care how good your quarterback is. If you can't protect them, what good is that? It's not. So if it's a quarterback-driven lead, it's equally an offensive line-driven league. And the Browns have got to protect these guys and get more guys like Joe Thomas who care, but also can get the job done. And get more guys like Terrell Pryor who care and can also get the job done. Otherwise, they'll go 0-16 this year, and then they'll win three or four more games next year, and maybe the Browns will never be good, and maybe they'll move again or maybe change their name to change their image. Kind of like Time Warner is trying to change their image by renaming themselves Spectrum, you know, to sound more like a people-oriented telecommunications company. Maybe the Browns eventually will change their name to give their fans something to be proud of. But I digress. I'm going to go ahead and take a break here because my voice is starting to slip a little bit, so I'm going to drink some water. In the meantime, you're listening to the Sport Diehards on Radio AFS. I am your host, Steve Itzkowitz. Thank you for continuing to listen in, Hank, and to everybody else that is listening right now. Enjoy Hang Tough by Tesla. We'll be right back in about 4 minutes. Next thing on the docket, well, let's see. Around the NFL, surprising things revealed from the standings. That's up next. You listen to the Sport Diehards on Radio AFS with your host, Steve Itzkowitz. Don't go anywhere.
Yeah.
We are hanging tough here on the Sport Diehards. I'm Radio AFS. I'm your host, Steve Itzkowitz. And actually, I was going to go around the NFL, and I'll do that in a couple of minutes here, but there was something I wanted to bring up here in my show notes that I just noticed. Former Baltimore Ravens linebacker Ray Lewis had been critical of quarterback Joe Flacco for lack of passion. Ray Lewis has since apologized for those remarks because it set off a crap storm of sorts with people and his criticism of Joe Flacco. And a lack of passion, it got me to thinking, you know, if there's something to what Ray Lewis says, because certainly one thing Ray Lewis was known for was passion on a football field. Played the game with outright passion, played the game with a motor that never, ever, ever stopped. And so I was thinking, I looked at the first place teams in the NFL and the standings, and that led to around the NFL looking at the standings and things I noticed about that. And we'll get to that momentarily. But I looked at the first place team starting quarterbacks, and they've been known to show passion and or have a high level of success. Well, the first quarterback, Tom Brady, who is very passionate and has had a high level of success. So the answer to that question is yes, having shown passion. Joe Flacco has won a Super Bowl, not a very passionate guy. Aaron Rodgers type, Jay Cutler type. Kind of cool, California cool, even though he's not from there. Brock Osweiler of the Houston Texans, from what I can see, not a very passionate guy, leading the Houston Texans 6-3, who are tied with the Raiders right now, 10-10 in Mexico City. Derek Carr of the Raiders, yes, very passionate, very demonstrative on the field. Dak Prescott of the Cowboys, yes, has been very demonstrative this year, plays the game with a great deal of passion. And his name is Dak. How do you not rally around a guy named Dak? Seriously, what a cool name that is. Matthew Stafford. I've never really seen him show that much passion, but I know he's very excited about what's happening with the Lions this year. They're in first place in the NFC North, if you can believe that. As the Browns are skidding towards 0-16, the Lions are trying to get into the playoffs, ironically enough. I'd say he's a little more passionate than Aaron Rodgers is, but I don't think he's very passionate. Matty Ice Ryan, yes, has shown passion on the field, smiles a lot, will pump his fists, but then he's also called Matty Ice Ryan because he stays cool under pressure. But he's been known to be passionate. And Russell Wilson, the Seahawks, absolutely. Every interview ends with, go Hawks. Very passionate about playing the quarterback position, very passionate about his team. The top four records, so there is something to being a passionate quarterback and being on a team that is successful or playoff worthy. But here's the thing. The top four records in the NFL belong to the following starting quarterbacks: Dak Prescott, Tom Brady, Derek Carr, and Russell Wilson, all known for passion, for playing their position or high levels of success in the case of Brady. So I truly believe there is something to being passionate as a quarterback and that leading to team success. The worst record amongst teams in first place, the Baltimore Ravens with Joe Cool Flacco and a division that is led by a 5-5 team. So I think having a quarterback that can stay cool under pressure but is also very passionate on the sideline when a touchdown is scored, and Tony Romo is a lot like that as well. Drew Brees is like that also. He has no problem showing emotion on the field. Never has. I think Andrew Luck is a lot like that too. But I think there is something to what Ray Lewis said in terms of a quarterback being passionate, being effective, and those guys that I named are effective, hence being on first place teams, but having passion to go along with that. Can charge you, can get you to a higher level of success than in the first round buys and home field advantage of the playoffs, which doesn't hurt at all. So I think there's something to say about passionate, and the quarterbacks that I named that have the top four records in the NFL have been known for showing passion and or a high level of success. And I don't think that's a coincidence. So I think there's something to what Ray Lewis said, but I also think Ray Lewis picking on a former teammate and hope to win a Super Bowl in his final season as an NFL player is a bit much. And maybe it was a reach on Ray Lewis's part. Or I know Ray Lewis is trying to redeem himself after leaving ESPN, after being with them for 1 year last year on their Monday Night Football broadcast. Sunday Night
there after Sunday Night Football on NBC. So I was wondering what the motive for him was in doing that. That said, I think he has a point that a quarterback with passion that can play, that is effective, helps a team to reach a higher level of success than perhaps a team that is led by a quarterback who is effective but doesn't show as much passion that his teammates can feed off of. In looking at the NFL standings, a couple of things stood out to me. One, the Colts, bad a season as they've had, are 5-5, and they have a great chance to win the AFC South because they have one more day with the first-place Houston Texans in Week 14 on December 11th. Andrew Luck is currently in concussion protocol, so naturally their chances of winning the division are going to hinge on his ability to come back because Scott Tolzien will be starting in place of Andrew Luck. And with all due respect to Scott Tolzien, I wonder how he's still in the league. Every team needs a backup quarterback, I guess. He's theirs. But Andrew Luck coming back from the concussion protocol and being effective is going to go a long way towards giving the Colts a chance to knock off the Texans on December 11th and possibly win the AFC South yet again. Because they beat Texas, or they beat Tennessee as they usually do, and beating Jacksonville, talk about a JV team or a team that should be relegated. Jacksonville's another team. It's really the Texans and the Colts. If the Texans lose this division, then Bill O'Brien might lose his job. Because you sign a quarterback like Brock Osweiler to all that money, you still have a really, really good defense, but Bill O'Brien is an offensive head coach. Therefore, if his offense is not playing very well, that's going to reflect on him and not in the way that he wants that to. So the Colts still having a chance to win the AFC South to me is remarkable, given that they don't have an offensive line. Their defense has played much, much better. They haven't given up as many big plays. They've kept plays in front of them. They tackle better. So that certainly helps when a defense is actually doing what it's supposed to be doing fundamentally, and that's tackling people, keeping plays in front of you, stuff like that. The fact that they still have a chance to win this division with Houston being a far superior team on paper is a miracle in its own right, and Ryan Grigson, the GM, and Chuck Pagano should be praying to the football gods that it continues. Because if there's two guys that should probably be demoted from where they are right now, it's those two. But Andrew Luck has persisted. The defense has gotten better, and they got to get him back out of concussion protocol. Otherwise, all of this is pointless. But for them to still have a chance at this point is absolutely remarkable, and I think the Colts deserve all the credit in the world. I think the players do, not the management of the team. I'm not ready to go there. I think it's one of the worst managed teams in the NFL. Not as bad as the Browns and the Niners, mind you, but it's close. But the players have really hung in there, and you give them all the credit in the world, and Andrew Luck is a big reason for that. So we'll see what happens. But that definitely stood out to me. Another thing that stood out to me, remember when the NFC East was the worst division in the NFL for the past 3 years? Not anymore. The NFL for about 30 years, up until about 3 years ago, was the gold standard of the NFL. Ultra-competitive teams that won. Not ultra-competitive teams that lose. You know, the AFC North is ultra-competitive. And not a single team has a winning record. So it's competition, and it's ugly, and it's unbelievable. Well, it's also unbelievable what's going on in the AFC, because the AFC North doesn't have a single winning team in it. First place is held by the Ravens right now at 5-5. But guess what? The NFC East, not a single team has a losing record. The Cowboys are in first, followed by the Giants, the Redskins, who are having a really good year, and Kirk Cousins, boy, is he really stepping up here. It looks like his arm's gotten stronger against the Packers yesterday. I mind you, it's against the Packers, but still, he was making some throws yesterday. I didn't know he was capable of making. So that bodes very well, and they're always usually pretty good defensively, especially having added Josh Norman from the Panthers. But that's a very strong division, and the last place team, the Eagles, was in first place at one point during the year, got off to a 3-0 start. They're 5-5. the NFC East is back from a 3-year period in which they were hibernating, like grizzly bears. And now those grizzly bears are wide awake, and the Cowboys are at the top of the league, but the Giants and the Redskins are not far behind, and you have games left between those teams. And even the Eagles still have a pulse, although I think they're going to finish in last place, as we predicted before this season, by the way. They got off to a great start, but now they're settling back into what they are, and that's not quite complete, but a team with a bright future. The Redskins are playing very, very well. The Cowboys have been a surprise, and the Giants, I thought they would win the division last year, so I'm not surprised they have a winning record. I'm just a little surprised they're not in first place with that winning record. But the NFC East is back, and the AFC North is absolutely pathetic. So we'll see how quickly the AFC North can come back or how long this hibernation period may last. But the NFC East, gold standard once again this year, not a single losing team. We'll see if that holds for the last 5 weeks. And you also remember when the NFC West was considered the best division in the NFL with the Seahawks, with the Cardinals, when the Niners were good with Harbaugh. And you figure the Rams would start to get better, but the Rams just keep regressing and regressing and regressing into complete offensive hell at this point with Jeff Fisher as the head coach, a man so conservative that the idea of a long pass actually gives him nightmares. But the NFC West has regressed because the Seahawks are still the Seahawks, but the Cardinals have taken a step back this year. The Niners are the worst team in the NFC. And the Rams are just consistently mediocre at best and bad at worst. So you only have one team in the NFC West with a winning record. And the second worst franchise in the NFL resides right there with the 49ers, as we talked about before. So the NFC East is back. The NFC West has regressed back to what they were before a dominant 3-year period with the Niners, the Cardinals, and the Seahawks. The Rams are the Rams, and that doesn't appear to be changing anytime soon because it would appear that Jeff Fisher is not going to lose his job anytime soon or that he's going to hire an offensive coordinator that's actually going to open it up and allow Jared Goff to show off the strong arm that he supposedly has. We'll see about that, but the Rams are stuck in mediocrity. The Niners have gotten worse. The Cardinals have gotten worse. They need to get younger, especially at the quarterback position with Palmer. And the Seahawks continue to be consistent. And the Seahawks right now with the Cowboys are the two best teams in the NFC. They figure those two teams have the best chance to get out of the NFC and go to the Super Bowl. We'll see which one. And I'll talk about who I think that may be on a future show. The Dolphins. You know, the Dolphins are doing now what the Bills did earlier this year after starting 0-2. They're sneaking up on the NFL as they've won 5 straight behind a revamped running game led by Jay Ajayi, who couldn't beat out Arian Foster before Foster got hurt and retired. Now Jay Ajayi, I'm not sure how Arian Foster influenced him, but Jay Ajayi has turned himself into a really good back, and he's doing so despite having an offensive line that is without Mike Pouncey and Brandon Albert, but all, as of yesterday, also Laramie Tunsil. They still managed to beat a Rams team at home and playing very well defensively this season, with Ajayi having a decent game and Ryan Tannehill, Mr. Johnny-come-lately, a guy who seemingly for 3 quarters struggles, and then the 4th quarter comes around and suddenly turns it on. That's what he did yesterday, leading the Dolphins on an improbable comeback against the upset Rams. And Ndamukong Suh leading a very good front seven. But the Dolphins are for real right now, and they're vying with Kansas City for the 6th spot in the NFC and the AFC playoffs. And I don't think Miami gets in because I just don't think they have enough offensively. I also think when they play against a team that's smart, they're going to try, that team will try to beat them over the top because Miami can be had with a pass. They have a good front seven, but their secondary is vulnerable to big plays down the field. The Rams sort of did take advantage of that, and why would they? Because like I mentioned, Jeff Fisher and long passes do not mix. He doesn't do that. Not with rookie quarterbacks that he's starting almost against his own will. So why would they take advantage of that? But some other team will. And I think ultimately that would be Miami's undoing. But for them to win 5 straight under basically having no offensive line and a passing game led by a quarterback who is inconsistent at best is remarkable, and they should be given all the credit in the world for that. At the end of the day, that's why it's the NFL, because when I look at the standings, it's just screwy to me. What's going on? Every year, just something. And these are the things I notice looking around the NFL, looking at the standings. You'll read the standings and the box scores more often. You'll see things that you thought you'd never see, and it will amaze you. Like it amazes me and allows me to have shows like this where I have an opportunity to talk about that with all of you. We have a couple minutes left to go, so for the last couple of minutes, I'm going to say what I'm thankful for. I'm thankful that this year is almost over. It has been a rough and tumble year. It's been great in some moments, and it's been a year filled with changes. But sports is a constant. My friends are a constant. Toastmasters is a constant. Having opportunity to speak like this is a constant, and family is a constant. And I'm grateful and I'm thankful for each and every one of you. I'm thankful for Radio AFS, for Jacob Bouvet, for inviting me on here and edifying me and make me feel like I'm the greatest podcast in the world, even though I'm not. Far from it. There are people much better than me. But I'm thankful for the faith that he shows. And I'm thankful to be part of the Radio AFS family to help build this network up, see if we can get our names out there a little bit more. Thankful for Die Hard Sports Radio. I am thankful for the fact that some of these stories, I'm thankful for the fact that one day Jeff Fisher will not be the head coach of the Rams. I don't have to keep hearing sports talk radio here in LA talk about this, even though I'm a Niners fan. Or maybe I should be thankful he's still the head coach. Maybe that's what I should root for, actually, because if that's the case, then Jared Goff will never fully develop. I'll tell you that right now. So maybe I should root for that as a Niners fan to listen to LA Sports Talk Radio a little less often when they're complaining about him. Well, you made your bed. You wanted the Rams back. You got them back. This is what you got back from St. Louis. Live with it. That's all I can say. We are out of here. I will be back next week. NFL Week 12, NBA, see where the Lakers are after the most rigorous stretch of the season so far. So far, not so good against Chicago and San Antonio. We'll see how they do against Oklahoma City and Golden State tomorrow and analyze that next week along with NFL Week 12. The college football season is almost over and we'll almost determine who the college football playoff components will be. You've been listening to the Sport Diehards on Radio AFS with your host, Steve Beskowitz. Happy Thanksgiving, everybody. Thanks for listening.